All right, good morning. It is a very happy Tuesday. Bears One, welcome into the show. Bill Ryder with you. A lot of things to unpack. Appreciate you listening. Phone number, as always, 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Social media, sports writer, sports R-E-I-T-E-R, Ryan Hickey. He's the executive producer, talented host and producer, Ryan underscore Hickey. And the number three, Tom Fornelli, is going to be on the show. We'll talk some baseball. It's been a great postseason. A little bit of a controversy last night. A certain Milwaukee Brewer did not, perhaps one would say I would, sacrifice his body for the team. We'll talk about that. NFL power rankings, which are confounding, perplexing, difficult, murky. Kind of like the entirety of the NFL this year. It's coming up end of this hour. We had two because the NFL isn't not dumb. But it is dumb. We had two games last night and a baseball game. Some overlap there. I want to watch both. We'll get to the Bills losing that game to the Falcons, 24-14. And I think what it reinforces about the AFC and it's sort of obvious, but maybe more on the nose than you would think, the Achilles heel, the real weakness of Buffalo's hopes, dreams, chances. And again, an AFC that's take your temperature on the Chiefs wide open. We'll talk about that. Bunch of things to get to. I want to start with the Bears win, though. And I'm not going to make it entirely about Chicago. I'm not going to pronounce after the field goal magistrate of the new guy, 25-24, let's go victory, that the Bears are a contender. I want to draw in that win and all the things that Chicago overcame. It's history. It's mistakes in that game. A plucky Commanders team. Neither team was great, if we're being really honest. I want to draw the right conclusion, and it is this. It sure looks like Ben Johnson is the guy, that guy, the right guy. We talk a lot about quarterbacks making the leap from the college game to the NFL game, and can it work? And by the way, we had two quarterbacks last night on whom we talked about those things a lot, and we thought, and I think we still have, not a great game for him, settled on Jaden Daniels can do it. And we weren't sure, maybe aren't sure, we're getting more sure that Caleb Williams can do it. 1 and 2 in their respective drafts. And that's a common reality. Can you make the leap from really good, outstanding, highly touted college quarterback, you get drafted in the NFL and succeed in the NFL? And the washout rate, and I'm talking guys drafted number one overall pick, first round, highly coveted, top five pick, whatever you want, however you want to break it down, the washout rate is high. The failure rate by the standards of that level of a draft pick and quarterback talent going from college to the pros is 50 or 60%. What we don't talk about enough is so is the exact same leap. It's the same thing for NFL coordinator making the leap to NFL coach, to head coach, to the guy. When Dan Campbell got the job, all we knew about him, and we always play this clip because it's funny, was him biting kneecaps. Well, it's bite kneecaps. Ben Johnson last night had his moment, the equivalent moment, for when we know a highly coveted QB is going to be okay. When you go, all right, we'll see what teams he has over the years. We'll see what his teammate, but this guy is the real deal. Doesn't mean he'll win or lose, but he belongs. He is an NFL quarterback. In this case, he is an NFL head coach. That's what that game was last night. That was Chicago. And again, I think jury's still out on Caleb Williams. I'm feeling good about where the jury's going to come back with, but I think the jury's out. But I now know, I now believe, I saw last night, I've seen enough over this three-game win streak for the Bears, which is unfortunately fairly unprecedented for them. They're 3-2. I now know they hired the right head coach. And by the way, it was a gamble. It wasn't a guarantee. He was one of the coveted coordinators, as you know, on the offensive side, offensive guy coming out of Detroit after all their success. They also, the Detroit Lions last year, had a defensive coordinator, equally well-regarded. Maybe not as sexy because it was the defensive end, but in football circles, this guy named Aaron Glenn, equally well-regarded. And you know what happened? He went to the Jets, and the Jets are a disaster. And before you go, oh, they're the Jets and Justin Fields, the Jets and the Bears are the same. They're awful, terrible, bad organizations. The reality is that when you were a would-be NFL head coach, like a would-be NFL starting quarterback, you're probably going to get, most times, 90% of the time, a bad job. That's the way that it works. The Chiefs aren't drafting a quarterback next year, and they're not looking for a head coach next year. You're going to usually have to prove yourself in a bad position. Ben Johnson's done it. Aaron Glenn hasn't. Look, making that move, being that guy, is hard to do. And it's even harder when you have to take a job like the Jets or the Bears. The Bears are losers. They're losers. They're not losers last night. I'm excited about the win. They're 3-2. There's reason to hope. This is a long-term project. And again, Ben Johnson, Monday Night Football, beating the Commanders to get 3-2 doesn't mean necessarily and probably that in 2025 the Chicago Bears are going to be a contender or even a legitimate playoff team. Maybe it does. That's not the takeaway. The takeaway is in 2026 and 2027, odds are probably it looks good Chicago's going to be the real deal because of their coaches. Again, now I'm not saying Ben Johnson's the fifth best coach of all time, but let me just draw the analogy again. Peyton Manning wasn't great statistically. He turned the ball over a lot his first year in the National Football League. But there were moments, a lot of them, where you go, okay, that guy's going to be just fine as time goes along. And that's true for every quarterback that proves himself. It took five games, Ben Johnson showing that he can take a losing organization and get it done. Now, let me just point this out to you. This year, Ben Johnson, this won't seem like a big deal, but it is. His football team, they're 3-2 now. They are now, after last night's heroic, last second, let's go, field goal magic win, they are now 2-1 in one possession football games. Why is that important? Because losers lose and winners win. That's a reality. And in those margins, and no sport exists in the margins more than the National Football League, the distance between being the best and the worst is at its least in professional sports in the National Football League as compared to most sports. You got to be able to win these games. Under Matt Eberflus, who was so bad at his job, and again, overmatched because of what he took over, that his name became Eberlus, the Bears were 5-19 in one-possession games. It's not as if Eberlus lost by four touchdowns every single game. That's not how it works in the National Football League. The margins are thin, and these things absolutely matter. The Bears were so problematic that our friend Ty Dunn, correctly, accurately, with remarkable reporting over at Go Long, wrote a three-part series on the Bears, of which I, don't tell Ty, I hadn't been paying for it, and then I paid for it to read it, and now I pay for the whole thing because it's really good, but I read every word. House of Dysfunction. It's not just a catchy headline. It's true. And if you read his reporting, it was dysfunctional. Caleb Williams is talented. Everybody's talented. Everybody's talented at this level. That is what Ben Johnson took over and steered last night to a remarkable team culture turnaround, quarterback culture turnaround. Because here's the deal. Caleb, and this is such an indictment of the Chicago Bears. But Caleb Williams, Ty Dunn wasn't wrong. Caleb Williams was a problem. He was underwhelming. He was underachieving. And he, Caleb Williams, was the latest quarterback, and you can put coaches in there too with Eberlus, to come into a place mired in dysfunction and losing and a bad culture and just got broken by it. The NFL will break you. The NFL will break you sometimes. If you're in a culture that's that awful, it'll break you. The combination is brutal to overcome. Last night, and I think this illustrates how impactful Ben Johnson has been and how stark the challenge for Caleb Williams and how stark the challenge for Ben Johnson to fix Caleb Williams. Last night, Caleb Williams became the first quarterback in Bears history. Not since some random year 12 years ago, not since ever, to have five straight games to start a season with 200 or more passing yards and one or more touchdowns. Which, by the way, is not a high bar. You know, I'm a short guy. This is like me winning a short guy contest. It's not super, I'm a 5'9". It's not super impressive. But it illustrates that Caleb Williams is starting to get to a place, a better place, a place of confidence. We talked to Joe Theismann yesterday, and he called this. He said, you can see this improvement. And Joe, obviously legendary quarterback, can look at QBs the way that a Picasso can look at a painting and sort of see things that most of us can't. He saw this. But the thing that I think really tells the tale after the game, because there's celebrations and Ben Johnson gave a really cool speech and everyone's going crazy, Caleb Williams has been arrogant. He's been part of that dysfunction. He's been difficult. He did undermine coaches who undermined him. Now, he undermined his coaches on purpose. You read Ty's reporting. His coaches did it through incompetence. You might say it doesn't, distinctions without differences. It matters. It's an attitude thing. But Caleb Williams is starting to see, oh, this works. This is the real deal, because Caleb Williams' response after the game was about telling you what I'm telling you right now. Ben Johnson is the right guy.
I'm excited every single day that I get to wake up and be coached by him. And I know the other guys are also. I think we believe in him. We trust him. We trust our other coaches. I think that's going to continue to keep growing. The belief in him is there. And we want to win for him. And we obviously want to win for us and the Chicago Bears.
I can't believe the Bears won. Caleb Williams can't believe the Bears won. Most of the people that are Bears fans in the universe can't believe the Bears won. I tend to put my phone away, which I never do. And I don't go on social media, which I tend to do, during Bears games, because I know how these things are going to end. I know a bunch of you sent me congratulations notes on X. Thank you. I'm sorry I didn't write back till today or hit you back. Because the game went the way the game always goes. Here are the other things Ben Johnson overcame, just in the micro, to give some context to the history of Bears loserdom. They had a touchdown call back for an illegal formation call I've never seen in my entire life, and I wanted to throw my TV across the room. They had a blocked field goal. They tried to complete a pass from Washington's, 30 or 31 on, I think it was 4th-and-1 or 4th-and-2, and they botched it. They had 9 penalties, and they were, as compared to, by the way, the Chiefs, who had 0 the other day for only the second time in 70 years, different story, different time. But the point is, they were sloppy, and they were highly ineffective for the most part on 3rd and 4th down. They had to rely on a field goal kicker off the street who turned to a cold shower and a small bed and a bunch of guys he doesn't know to make, 4 of his 5 field goals, and the one obviously got blocked. To overcome that and find a way to win is what the Chiefs do, or the Bills do, or the Eagles do, or the Rams do, or Tampa Bay does, or God help me, even the Colts right now. Not the Chicago Bears. Not the Chicago Bears. So, yeah, we can talk about Caleb, he's improving, and that is really significant. And we can talk about a talented Bears roster, talented last year too, by the way, winning some games and being scrappy and being 3-2. But more importantly, is a team that shot itself in the foot 7 times yesterday and still limped their way to victory. A team that started 0-2, lost a 1-possession game to start the year, and then got destroyed in a it's personal moment from Dan Campbell and the Lions, didn't flinch and didn't crumble. This is a Ben Johnson success story. And beyond that, and I can't believe I'm saying this because these words are never true, it's a Chicago Bears success story. They hired the right guy. There are going to be pitfalls along the way. Caleb Williams not out of the woods yet. We'll see. First, you got to become successful, then you got to manage that success. That's a big process for Caleb Williams, and it's a big process for Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson's the right guy. This is that moment where you gamble the guy can make the leap, and it turns out that he did. There are 3, you can't control ownership, so I'm going to put that aside, things that matter most in the National Football League. 3. Other things matter, lots of things matter, team sport. And put in whatever order you want. There's the quarterback, there's the GM, and there's the head coach. And in every one of those cases, and it's hardest to evaluate for us GM, because let's be fair, we're watching games, we're following college sports, we're following what coordinators do in the NFL. I don't know what some random scout with the Colts today is doing that will justify him being in charge of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 6 years. I don't know. I'm not there. But we can make evaluations on the other things. And we talk so much about the quarterback play, and is that guy going to make it, and if Arch gets drafted, or is this guy going to be good enough, and Cam Ward get his coach fired, and on and on and on and on. Matters. Same significance as when these coaches make these leaps, when they become first-time head coaches. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Ben Johnson took the most brutal, maybe, I think yes, culture in the National Football League, and he's the guy. And that's the takeaway from last night. That's the celebration. Chicago hired the right coach. They took a big swing. They did not miss. Jets did a similar thing. They did miss. It happens. And I'm not mad at the Jets. I get why the Jets did it. Don't give me this offense matters. The offense was a better, easier gamble. The Jets went, okay, the Detroit Lions hired Dan Campbell, and that's a tough guy. We've got a tough guy, Aaron Glenn, under him. No, man, no. You never know what's going to work and what's not. Ben Johnson's that guy. It's such a relief. Huge win. Huge win for Chicago. Huge win for the Bears. 888-710-4ISN. I'm not crowning them this year. I'm done being that idiot who's like, they're going to win 12 games. I don't know what they're going to do. But I know they hired the right coach, and they're going to figure it out, this guy, at some point. And I'll take it. 888-710-4ISN if you want to give us a call. We never have weather in L.A. It is raining like crazy. We're going to have hail. The Bears won a close game. The world's upside down. What's going to happen next? Ryan Hickey's going to be nice to me? No, he's actually always nice. That doesn't even play. The other guy I work with. Ryan's always nice. I guess it'd be Ryan's going to be mean to me. 888-710-4ISN. There was another game last night. I got to get to baseball, too. But the Bills lost. And in a vacuum, it's not the end of the world. Teams lose. People lose. Michael Penix Jr. would tell you the Falcons are the real deal. Okay, I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. Buffalo has a weakness. And it might seem like the weakness that everybody has when you rely on your quarterback. But that's actually not so. Why Buffalo's loss paves a path for the other teams in the AFC, and why this might be the one year, if you're one of those teams, not the Ravens, not the Bengals, not the Chiefs, not the Bills, you have a legitimate chance to get yourself some hardware. I'll explain next here on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
That's what I'm realizing. People are people. What an insight I just brought. People are people. I'm going to win a macaroni award. I'm going to win two macaronis this year. Marconi, macaroni. You say potato, I say potato. Let's go.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Does anyone say potato? I've heard tomato. I've heard a buddy of mine, instead of brunch, what does he call it, brunch? I've heard some weird stuff. Have you ever heard anyone say potato? Like, hey, can I have some potatoes down there? Pass me the potatoes. I've never heard that.
You've heard someone say tomato?
Oh, yeah. Ooh. That's what he says. He doesn't say brunch. He says tomato.
Ew. I don't like that one. That's tough.
He's from New York, too.
That is not a New York thing. I promise
he's a rich. He's a rich kid. He's a rich dude.
That's him on his own saying tomato.
When Robert Redford died, I texted him. Like, oh, man, that was your neighbor, right? Like, that was your neighbor. He's like, that wasn't my neighbor. What are you talking about? I'm like, didn't you grow up next to him on the Upper East Side? He's like, no. And then an hour later, I mean, I saw him a lot because he was friends with Paul Newman. I'm like, okay, man, like the same thing.
Yeah, Paul Newman was his neighbor. Then, I get it right.
And then he goes, he's like, or maybe Michael J. Fox. I don't know. I don't watch movies. I'm like, well, they're different. Those are like, you grew up next to Michael J. Fox and you think I'm a, what are you talking about? Never met Robert, never lived next to him, just met him 20 times. Rich people, bro. If you're a rich person, good for you, though. I want to be. I won't be. Would've been nice. I'm rich in friendship, question mark? I'm rich in Chicago wind. Now I'm poor in those things. How you doing, Ryan? You good?
I'm good, Bill. Yeah, happy you're happy.
What game did you, what was your viewing preferences yesterday? I hate the double Monday Night Football.
Stinks.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either. It can't be a ratings like bonanza because you're. I don't get the psychology. Next week, by the way, we get another doubleheader. This time split, so you got a 10 Eastern, 7 local kick after an early kick. Terrible.
I don't understand. I understand that they historically, the National Football League does this to start a season, right? It's the opening week, and I have to accept that there's usually going to be two, but what is next week? Week 6 or 7? Where are we? I mean, what are we doing?
It's gone on long enough. But maybe the first weekend, fine. Other than that, what do
first weekend I accept, even though I don't like
it.
Middle
of the year? Doubleheader?
Both games good last night. We talked Bears. Obviously, nail-biter against the Commanders. Brutal loss for the Commanders, by the way. And last year, and I won't pretend it's the exact same thing, because the way that Washington beat the Bears last year was in the most Bears fashion of all time. But last year's game was a turning point for each of these teams. It really was. And while I don't think the turning point will be as significant, I won't pretend I think the Chicago Bears are making the NFC Championship game the way the Commanders did last year. They made that run after they beat Chicago in the regular season. It's a big win for Chicago. The Falcons-Bills game was interesting. And I will admit, I really thought Bears-Commanders would be interesting because I thought, okay, it's Caleb Williams, Ben Johnson. How do we evaluate them? How's Jaden Daniels doing? That game feels like it could be closer. I thought Buffalo was going to win, whatever, 37 to negative 3 or something. And it went a different direction. Falcons win 24-14. And Ryan, you made this point, and I think it's right. Josh Allen has to be incredible for Buffalo to have a chance. And I know that the initial reaction to that would be, oh, the teams that have great quarterbacks don't need those guys to be great. But actually, not in individual games necessarily. I've seen the Kansas City Chiefs win games when Mahomes has been basic, and we just go, Mahomes will be amazing when it matters. It's November, it's October, it's fine. I have seen the Eagles win games, including this year sometimes, when Jalen Hurts has not been really impressive. The Bills are in a position where they have to have Josh Allen be outstanding. And the fact is that he wasn't last night. I know he got sacked a bunch of times, but he turned the ball over. He wasn't particularly great. And what it underscores is that Buffalo is an elite team. They're an elite, Super Bowl-level contending, outstanding team that has maybe the smallest margin for error. Nobody wants, when you go into a big game, if we're projecting second round of the playoffs or AFC Championship game, and I'm the Chiefs, I would like Patrick Mahomes to play well. If I'm the Ravens, I would like, and they're not going to be there because they're 1-5, but I would like Lamar Jackson to play well. If I'm the Bengals and it's an alternate universe and Joe Burrow isn't injured again, I would like Joe Burrow to play well. But in a lot of those cases, if I am the Eagles, I would like Jalen Hurts to play well. It's not likely you're going to win if that guy doesn't play well. But those teams, 20-30% chance. If Josh Allen can't be the Josh Allen that makes him a top 2-3 quarterback in the NFL, a perennial now MVP contender, the guy for me that I really want to get a ring because I think his career would be the most impacted or the least elevated in the way that it should be, minus one. I think he's the best quarterback in the NFL, not named Mahomes. For Buffalo to get it done, they have to have Josh Allen be that guy. People have off games. Sometimes, I mean, if Chris Jones and the Chiefs, and there's a lot of ways that Kansas City can and has beaten Buffalo over the years, but it's not been Josh Allen. Josh Allen's always been amazing in those games. I mean, Josh Allen has really had his own heroism and his excellence just thwarted by counter Mahomes moves. Josh Allen, especially the last couple times in the playoffs, has been great in the situations where they've been eliminated. But it's not impossible that Chris Jones is going to have a game in the playoffs against the Bills where he just goes and he gets Josh Allen himself and he creates problems. And what we saw last night, with all respect to the Falcons and Michael Penix Jr., and I'm not even going to play it, telling us, I think we're legit. Okay, maybe. What we saw is that the AFC is the most wide open that it's been for me in living memory. And we'll do power rankings in about 15 minutes. They're brutal. I don't even like them. I've redone them 7 times. Because there's no clear favorite. If you want to, it's such a cop-out. Like, if I had to pick a team right now that I think is coming out of the AFC, it's probably the Chiefs 1 and the Bills 2, and that means it's the Chiefs 1, 2, and 3, because the Bills just can't beat them in those situations. But you can make a case for the Steelers. Ryan will make a case for the Colts. I know Jacksonville lost this last game, but I think Seattle's pretty good to good, and so maybe they're legitimate. The Chargers and the Broncos are hard to rely on. It is wide open because the Chiefs, whether they're going to get there or not, continue to be lackadaisical. And Buffalo, whether they get there or not, continue to remind us that even in a sport where you want your quarterback to play well, if theirs doesn't, they just can't win. They are not. Buffalo is a Josh Allen team, even more than the Chiefs or a Mahomes team. And that is not to say that one is better than the other. It is to say the reason, in part, the Chiefs have rings and Buffalo hasn't made a Super Bowl in this era is because there are layers of excellence to the Chiefs. That's how you win these things. That includes the best quarterback in the NFL, certainly. There are not layers of excellence to Buffalo. And in a lot of ways, I think it actually is in praise of Josh Allen because this insight for me, this game last night, made me realize, wow, Josh Allen has had to level up in a way that Mahomes did early on. Remember, early in this run for Kansas City, in this dynastic sort of spot that we're in, however you want to describe the Chiefs since Mahomes burst onto the scene in his second year in the NFL, first year as a starter, early on, Mahomes did crazy, impossible things, throwing left-handed, setting records, all because he had to, because they hadn't put together a defense that was consistent. Spagnuolo got hired, and you know the history of the Chiefs. And so as the Chiefs kind of raised up, not to Mahomes' level, but raised up, Mahomes didn't have to be Superman every single day. Didn't have to go into the phone booth every single game. And what I haven't appreciated in Buffalo, but what is a weakness for them, is that Josh Allen's had to stay that guy. Josh Allen doesn't get to go back to being Clark Kent for any game. And last night he wasn't Superman, and they lost. Doesn't mean they can't win a Super Bowl. Doesn't mean they're not outstanding. Doesn't mean they're not excellent. I just think that the better comp for what Buffalo is are the early years Chiefs teams, where Josh Allen's going to have to carry them in most of the moments that matter. If you were going to pick a team, and then we'll go into power rankings and do that, Ryan. If you were going to pick a team or a couple, like you had to pick a team, you win 100 grand if you get it right, from the AFC, represent the AFC in the Super Bowl, but you're not allowed to take the Chiefs or the Bills, given the fact that Burrow is injured, that I'm riding the Ravens off in their season. I'm assuming you are too because they're 1-5. Who are you turning to? I know you're a Colts fan, but you get $100,000 if you get it right.
It's a lot of money. Wow. No Chiefs, no Bill. Honestly, I think I would take the Colts in a non-homer.
Oh, come on!
Wait. Their offense is putting up a lot of points. They have a really good offensive line, a really good run game. I don't trust the defense for sure, but you look around. Can I trust right now Justin Herbert? This offensive line is very banged up. The run game's not really very good.
That's where my mind went.
I think the Chargers on paper with a winning coach and Jim Harbaugh, but...
But by the way, your answer is legitimate. It also speaks to the fact that it's crazy to think about how wide open things are. And I think the Chiefs are going to be okay. And we've discussed, and Joe Theismann said this yesterday, the Chiefs' win over the weekend against Detroit was critical and also sort of obvious. And you called this too, that it would have been more fun if they'd gone to 2-4. But we're going to look back, and they're going to be whatever they're going to be. They're going to be 11-4 at some point, or 12-5 at some point, or whatever it is. And we're going to go, remember when they were 3-3 or 2-3 and we're all freaked out? I think that's likely. But they're still 3-3 right now. And they've still been, again, I think lackadaisical is the right word. So, okay, maybe the Chiefs. For me, yes, that's who I would choose. And then Buffalo's the next up. And maybe Buffalo. But again, we saw last night, and they've lost 2 in a row, by the way. It's not like it's just one game last night, that there is this inability for the team to basically pick up Josh Allen the 3 out of 17 times a season where he doesn't pick them up. They don't. They haven't. That's not what they do. Again, to me, it's like Chiefs in the early years of Mahomes. And after that, I don't know. Steelers? I don't like Aaron Rodgers, but I mean, they're, you know, Patriots? Credit Mike Vrabel doing a great job. I don't think so. Jags? Colts? Daniel Jones? I'm gonna tell you, Daniel Jones is paving the way to a Super Bowl appearance. I'll go Chargers just because of their head coach.
And he's one of the, like, that's the thing. Outside of Kansas City, outside of Buffalo, there's not many, forget teams, there's even people, players that you actually kind of trust right now. Jim Harbaugh, yeah, he's probably the most trustworthy person. It is.
The Broncos have won what? The Broncos have won 3 in a row, but I'm just not a...
Boy, you watch that game in London. That would give me a lot of confidence.
I know. They don't look that good. All right. Good for Josh. By the way, real quick, well, you know that we got 2 cats a year ago, right? Did I tell you this? We got 2 cats. My kids wanted cats, and they scratch everything. I've been trying to get them in to get declawed, right, to take their claws off. My wife keeps delaying it, and today she dropped on me. California just banned declawing cats, and I'm convinced she knew this. She played me. She goes, we'll do it. I'm stuck with these cats, these damn cats and their claws. Is it cruel to take cats' claws out? What's the issue?
I was just going to add, I've never had cats. What's the benefit of letting them keep the claws in?
They can destroy your landlord's furniture, and when he finds out, cost you even more money than you thought you were going to spend on these stupid things?
Yeah, that sounds
It is now illegal
terrible.
To declaw a cat in California.
Ugh. Guess you gotta make a quick Vegas trip.
I got outmaneuvered by my wife. She Ben Johnson'd me. She's the Ben Johnson of this wedding. I'm Aaron Glenn. I thought it was the other way around.
Oh, boy. It's a tough realization.
It took me 20 years. You should realize it sooner when you get married. Yeah, I should have gotten here quicker. I'm Aaron Glenn.
Do you wear capris, too, on the sideline? Fashion statement?
I don't, but I have a cat. We got these stupid cats, and one of them is a bobcat, I think. It must weigh 400 pounds. This thing is the size of a car. I could ride it to work. I could put a saddle on it.
And just clawing up everything in sight. Nice.
Oh, my God, dude. Yeah, but at least the Bears won. All right, 888-710-4ISN. It is a very difficult power rankings. Eagles have lost 2 in a row. Bills have lost 2 in a row. Chiefs aren't even an above 500 football team. I've got some surprises for you in power rankings after Sports Flash from Peter Schwartz.
Infinity Sports Network, Sports Flash.
This report is brought to you by Advantage Gold. Before kickoff, get help securing your financial future with Advantage Gold today. Text GOLD to 85545 now and request your free gold investment kit or go to AdvantageGold.com. For terms, message, and data rates may apply. Tonight, Game 2 of the NLCS in Milwaukee. Dodgers took Game 1 last night, 2-1, as Blake Snell tossed 8 scoreless innings, giving up a hit while striking out 10. Freddie Freeman gushing over the Dodgers pitching.
Our starting pitching for the last, I would say, I mean, you guys would know more, 7-8 weeks has been, I mean, I don't know if you can write enough words in your stories about our starting pitching. It really has been amazing, and they seem to feed off each other, and as an offense, we're just trying to do everything we can to support them.
First pitch tonight, 8:08 p.m. Eastern Time. From the NFL, yesterday the Titans fired head coach Brian Callahan just 6 games into his second season. Offensive assistant Mike McCoy takes over as interim head coach for the rest of the season. I'm Peter Schwartz.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
Welcome back into Good Looking Radio. I'm Bill Ryder. Thanks for hanging out. Hi, Reinicke.
Oh, hello, Bill.
1 to 10 scale, where do you put yourself? Honestly.
On this show or in life?
No, in life, looks wise. What are you? 1 to 10, what are you?
I would gladly take like a 6.5.
Okay.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
I was thinking about that yesterday. Like, why did I put poor Ryan through that? Because I'm me. Good morning. Welcome into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Ryan, before we get into NFL power rankings, Ryan Hickey, executive producer, outstanding radio host as well. Check him on the weekends. Did a great job filling in last week for a couple days. We've got 2 very good, interesting perspectives from listeners that I've gotten. One is a rethinking of the Buffalo Bills, pitched as a rethinking of the how we should view the Buffalo Bills. Another is a rethinking of how we should view cats. Which one would you like first?
Ooh, let's start with the cats. I'm intrigued and see where it goes from there.
Pete P., who in a separate note basically said I'm a Richie Rich Moneybags guy, pretending not to be. I mean, no, man. But I did go to Paris. I did stay in a Holiday Inn Express last night. Very funny. God, I wish I were rich. This is what I'm just going to read this without comment. You ready? Sports writer. The only thing stopping your house cat from killing you is size. All species of cats are the ultimate land predator and should never be kept as a pet. They are disloyal, deceitful, cunning, opportunistic, and sociopathic. But what does he really think? What does Pete really think about cats? Okay, now I'm going to read you another one from somebody else. You tell me which one you are sold on more, that cats are evil or the following. This is from Titus McClendon. Now, I should have done this research. Titus is researching the show. He's producing the show and hosting the show. You ready for this? He points out that the Buffalo Bills' 4 wins are against the 1-5 Ravens, the 0-6 Jets, the 1-5 Dolphins, the 1-5 Saints, meaning that the teams that they have beaten have a combined record of 3-21. And that, therefore, the Bills are perhaps a fraud. What is more likely for you? The Bills are a fraud or cats are evil?
I like Titus's research. The numbers don't lie. With that said, I think I will lean more towards right now the cats are evil. I need some more sample size from the Bills. The cats feels...
They're just cats. I mean, if a cat were my size, it would be a lion, and then it would probably try to kill me. But it's not.
Do they ever cuddle up with you? Like, if you're on the couch, does the cat come over and
sits on me purring, like, oh my God. The other day, like, you're not my cat. You're my wife and kids' cats. Get off. Cats love me. Animals love me.
Okay, so I was going to say, if they didn't show affection, maybe, you know, they're just kind of there to be fed. And then, again, if they were bigger, they know they can't take you down. But if they could, I think they would. I would probably agree with that.
I just thought it was a very strong reaction from Pete P. That was a very emotional. Pete, did a cat hurt you when you were younger?
Multiple cats, it sounds. It's a lot of pent-up frustration.
a very big cat. All right, let's do, I can't wait. Let's do NFL power rankings. Yeah, you got there. Yeah.
Some will rise. Others will fall. Let the ranking begin on Writer Than You's NFL Power Rankings. Number 5.
Lucas, too. I love the imaging for this thing. All right, so a bit of a cop-out here. I'm going with the tie. What? I can't do ties?
It's your power rankings. You can do what you like.
one of your long-ago predecessors, Tom DiBenedetto, now the executive producer of the Jim Rome Show, hated ties so much, this will shock you to hear, that I would do nine teams in every power. I would just do like three-way, just to bleep with him. Number five, I'm going to put the Bills and the Eagles on here, and I think they're a similar category because there is an argument that each of these teams are actually the best teams in their respective conferences. They've also each lost two games in a row and been underwhelming. The Eagles largely because their offense just doesn't seem to be very good, and Buffalo for the reasons that, Titus just walked us through and his counter-argument to, you know, him versus the Cats. Their inability to... They just haven't played anybody. And by the way, you can only play who's in front of you, but you've lost to the teams that are in front of you, and I guess one of those teams is the Falcons? Question mark. So I've got a tie here. I know you love it. I know you embrace ties. I know you don't think it's a cop-out. Now things get a little crazy.
Number four.
You can. By the way, I want yours quickly after this, too. I'll try to go quick so you have time. I'll go Steelers here. Do you hear the uncertainty? This is the old you are what your record says you are. And the fact is that Mike Tomlin team... By the way, they haven't won... It's not. They're not blowing people away. They're winning close games. They're doing what Tomlin teams always do. They've won three in a row. And I have to admit it, and I want to do this later in the week, as Joe Theismann made me think about the ways in which Aaron Rodgers and LeBron James are actually the same. And Theismann said, and I thought it was so smart, that Aaron Rodgers was the GM with the Jets, not just a cornerback. He's a bad GM because he used to be an outstanding quarterback. That's why he got to do that. He's a terrible GM, and he's an okay to fine. He's an okay quarterback, goodish quarterback at this stage of his career. But a goodish quarterback with a well-run organization and a Mike Tomlin team, okay, you know what? So far, they're plodding along. They're winning games. It pains me to say it because I'm not an Aaron Rodgers guy. I think they're one of the better teams in the NFL so far. You are what your record says you are.
Number three.
Your Indianapolis Colts tied with my Bears. Just kidding. I didn't even write the Bears down. I don't know what to make on the Colts. Their offensive line is outstanding. They can run the football. Daniel Jones has looked very, very impressive in the ways that he needs to. They are undefeated at home. They've done a great job sort of protecting home turf. I think you said this last segment. Do you trust their defense?
No, I don't. I mean, they got carved up by Jacoby Brissett last week. Not
Jacoby
good.
Brissett. Yeah. But they're winning games. And again, in a not just AFC picture, in a picture in the NFL where there's just nobody that is easy to believe in, the Colts are doing the thing that's required of you. What are we, a third of the way through the season? We're winning a lot of football games.
Number two.
This one I feel better about. Even though they fell off of these rankings recently, and it's easy to lose track of them because they have a bad loss on their resume, I still think the Packers are likely going to turn out to be a really, really good football team. Is it weird that I don't want to put any team on my power rankings that have a tie just because I don't like ties? Is that a little irrational? It is irrational.
Ironic that you don't want to put a team with a tie in your power rankings, but we start the power rankings off with a tie.
With ties, yeah. Well, because power rankings are allowed to tie, but football games shouldn't. This is where I agree with Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso
went to England, left America, and was like, wait, we tie in soccer? And we call it football? What's happening here? I feel you, Ted. I think the Packers are going to be outstanding. I think it pains me because this is what they did under Aaron Rodgers. I think they're also likely to get healthy, to get right, and to probably end the season strong, and I think be one of the better teams in the NFC when we get there. I do want to get to the number one team because this one is actually not a stretch, even though it feels like one.
Number one.
I think it's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think every one of these teams I gave you deserve this incredible honor that they are in right now. Bill Reiter's Reiter than You, That's Me, Power Rankings is a seminal moment and achievement for any career, but they're fleeting. Do I think that the Colts and the Steelers are going to be there? I don't know. The Bills and the Eagles, one of them feel like they may be vulnerable enough that they will not be able to cling on to their well-earned tie. I think Tampa Bay is the real deal. I think they're actually a great football team, and we talked about this. Is today only Tuesday? We talked about this. You got the double thumbs up. This is your job if you have to produce me. You have to figure out, help me know what day of the week it is. I don't know what's going on. I think they're the real deal, and I think Baker Mayfield, as it turns out, at least this year, is a top five quarterback. And by the way, The only game they lost is to the Eagles, who just tied with the Bills over here for number five in a one possession game. So it's they beat Atlanta, looks like a better win. They won at Seattle, looks like a pretty good win. They beat San Francisco, who were 4-2. They won at Houston. They're winning close games, which, by the way, the Chiefs have done in the past. Eagles have done in the past on their way to glory and greatness. Give me one honorable mention, and then I'll let you.
Honorable mention.
I have a tie. So they're Patriots and Seahawks. I think they're both surprisingly good football teams. Salute Mike Vrabel out east, and salute Sam Darnold out west. Both those guys showcased why there are some believers in their abilities to be coaches and quarterbacks, respectively. How would you order this, Ryan, with or without ties?
No ties, so I got five teams. I would agree, number one, Buccaneers, for sure, so far this year. I would have the Colts, too. I respect their offense. They're playing consistent football.
You're such an optimist. I love it about you.
This is just, like you said, in the moment. This is fleeting. They could go from 2 to 32
I'm not
next week.
You.
It's a week-by-week ranking.
I like your optimism.
I would go 3 Green Bay Packers.
Okay, we're in the same ballpark.
4. Now, this is what I don't love. Actually, this is probably the team I don't love the most out of the 5. And ironically, they're not out of 5. They're at 4. I'm going to put the Chargers.
Yeah.
Some good wins early in the year. Tough middle stretch. I mean, you should have probably lost to the Dolphins last week and got lucky. Nice play by Justin Herbert, but you know what? They won the game. We'll give him credit. And I'll put the Patriots 5.
Really? I haven't watched enough Patriots football. It's part of the problem.
Drake may look good against the Bills on the road. That's an impressive win on the road in Buffalo.
I need to actually... Do you do red zone? I need a lot of red zone. I need to lock in on a Patriots game. I need to just pick a Patriots game and just watch that game.
Well, if they play the Jets anytime soon, you'll watch Drake May play pretty well. So maybe skip that one.
That's the game?
I don't know if that's going to be the true sign of things to come.
Can Aaron Glenn be fired this year?
Yes.
If they go 0-12, if they're 0-12, can he be fired?
Absolutely.
Absolutely?
Absolutely. And you just had a player walk off the field at halftime. Well, the clock was ticking. You had no idea what no one knew what they were doing. It's week 6.
It's week 6. It's not good.
It is not good, and it's not gone as we thought it was going to go.
And we all praise him for making Aaron Rodgers fly out to just be like, you're... didn't go the way we all thought it would.
This guy's a genius.
This guy knows what he's doing. People are weighing in on the cat thing. Billy Bones Jones. Pete P guy is obviously a dog person, and they are gross. Oh, I'm sorry. He's not agreeing. He's saying dogs are gross. Now we're at cat-on-cat crime. Animal-on-animal crime. I like dogs. Why can't we just get along? Dogs and cats. All right. Let's talk a little college football with Tom Fornelli next here on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right. Good morning. Welcome into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Let's talk some college football with CBS Sports college football reporter, co-host of the Cover 3 podcast, fellow Bears fan, so celebratory gentleman on a Tuesday morning, Tom Fornelli. Tom, good morning. I was told by my executive producer you believed in the Bears last night. I didn't. So your faith was rewarded because I always think they're going to lose.
You know, I had a strangely positive vibe about the game before it started, which all immediately went out the window once the game started. But yeah, you know, it was nice. It was nice to get the win.
It really was. We have in Ryan Hickey, the gentleman who called you and put you through, someone who's not had a positive run. He is a giant Penn State fan. And it has obviously been a difficult month for him emotionally, and I'm taking absolutely no pleasure in it as a Missouri grad and former Iowa fan because I'm from Iowa. Let's just start sort of big picture here. When you guys are on the Cover 3 podcast, when you're getting into it, what was your reaction and what is your sort of thought process now on what has happened to Penn State and James Franklin?
I mean, it's one of those decisions that is both startling because you don't really think it's going to happen, but then when it does happen, you also completely understand why, because if you look at the situation surrounding everything, like obviously the last few weeks, UCLA, the loss to Northwestern as, you know, 20-point favorites losing those two games, it's like, what the heck is going on the heels of that double overtime loss to Oregon? Like, there's no denying what James Franklin has accomplished at Penn State. Like, he took a program that was kind of stuck a little bit in the past too much, dug it out of there, got it back to a more modern level, and was competing at the top of the Big Ten on an annual basis, even if he was never really truly able to break through and take down Ohio State and Michigan consistently. But there was also the situation where, coming off of last year, when you win the two playoff games, you get to the semifinals. Like, Penn State put a lot of money into this year's team to convince guys who could have left last season to go to the NFL to come back. Drew Aller comes back. Nick Singleton comes back. Katron Allen comes back. A lot of guys came back, and that costs money. You then spend more money going into the transfer portal to bring in, you know, receivers. Last year, you spent money to get Andy Kotelnicki to come be your offensive coordinator, and then this offseason, you went and spent more money to get Jim Knowles to leave the defending national champions to become your defensive coordinator. So this was very much an all-in kind of season. And then you lose the Oregon game, and then you follow it up with those two losses to UCLA and Northwestern, and you're looking around, and it's like, we gave you everything that you needed to compete for a national title this year, and it's been a complete flop. And Tom, I think that's ultimately what leads to it.
Tom Fornelli hanging out here on the show. Tom, who are realistically, for you, the guys, the candidates who should be and will be considered to be the next head coach of Penn State?
Well, I think Penn State will do its due diligence and go after all the big fish. I think that, you know, it's the always you see on the message board, Urban Meyer's available, Urban Meyer's available. I don't think Urban Meyer has any interest in leaving the desk right now to get back into college football in the current state of where college football is, because it's a very different sport now than it was when he left. But I do think they go after guys like Kurt Cignetti, who's having more success at Indiana than Franklin has been able to have at Penn State. He's doing there what Penn State was hoping James Franklin was able to do for the last, you know, 10, 12 years. It's just, I don't think Kurt Cignetti is going to leave Indiana for Penn State right now, because he's got all the financial backing he needs there, and he's got the program in a better position than where Penn State is right now. So I don't think he wants to start over. I think the realistic options are Matt Rhule, who makes a ton of sense if you look at the connections between him and Pat Kraft. Pat Kraft is the athletic director at Penn State. He was also the athletic director at Temple when Matt Rhule was the head coach at Temple. Matt Rhule played linebacker at Penn State. As I mentioned earlier, there are still a lot of people in power at Penn State as far as the donor and booster base that are kind of, you know, longing for the Joe Paterno days of what the program once was. And Matt Rhule is kind of a reflection of that. So I could see them going that direction. And if they hire him, it might work out. It's just, the problem with Matt Rhule is the biggest knock on James Franklin was always his inability to beat top teams. Matt Rhule is 2-23 in his career against ranked teams as a head coach, and both of those wins came while he was at Temple. He's yet to beat a ranked team at either Baylor or Nebraska. So I feel like you'd be getting some more of the same. But, I like names like Matt Campbell at Iowa State. I think he would be a tremendous hire for them. I think he's done a terrific job both developing talent and, you know, exceeding expectations there, so much so that you kind of forget how difficult Iowa State is to win at, because he's been doing it so consistently. I mean, you won't want to hear this, but another candidate I think they should consider, although I don't know if he's really going to truly be interested in it, Eli Drinkwitz at Missouri. I think you look at him. Yeah, I mean, he recruits very well. He understands NIL. He understands the transfer portal. He understands how all that works to help boost your roster. He took Penn State's backup quarterback last year, and he's made him a better quarterback than Drew Aller has been for Penn State this year in Bo Pribula. I think that he is somebody who would be a home run hire at Penn State. It's just, I don't know if Eli wants to leave Missouri, and if he does leave Missouri, I think it would be for another SEC job before a Big Ten gig.
What is the reasonable ceiling for Nebraska this year, and what is the reasonable odds that Nebraska football can actually consider themselves back at some point under Matt Rhule if he sticks around?
I mean, I do think that a playoff berth is within realm of Nebraska. I'm not going to say it's likely, because I do think that this team has some deficiencies that could cost it a game at some point. But as you mentioned, like, you look at the rest of their schedule, USC is still going to be difficult based on what we saw of USC against Michigan, but that road game to Penn State at the end of the year no longer looks very difficult, because who knows what kind of condition Penn State will be in by that time, and you get Iowa at home to finish. So you look at this team as somebody who could get through the regular season at 10-2, and based on what I'm seeing around the country, like, 10-2 alone, even if you don't have a huge resume-boosting win, might be enough to get you an at-large this year, because I think most teams are going to finish the season with three losses. It's just the ultimate ceiling at Nebraska, I feel like, is going to be capped just because of the way recruiting works now. Like back in the 80s in the Tom Osborne days, when Nebraska was one of the blue blood premier programs and one of the only programs that you saw on TV every single week, it had a brand that was far more attractive to the top talent in the country. Now in this modern era, when everybody's on TV and everybody has money, the sell of coming to Lincoln isn't quite the same thing. So I think that there's a cap on what kind of talent you can bring. So I think this year they can get to the playoff. I just don't know if you could really turn Nebraska into a national title contender at this stage in the way college football is working, which is one of the reasons why I think, besides the old alma mater lure of Penn State, I do feel like that would be an allure for Matt Rhule, and that if he wants to compete for national titles, I think Penn State gives him a far greater opportunity to do that than Nebraska.
Tom Fornelli from CBS Sports, what in the hell has happened to Bill Belichick, the coach?
He has no idea how to coach college football. I mean, that's really all it is. Like, I've always argued at the NFL level, you know, there's a salary cap, and you are drafting the absolute cream of the crop from college football level every single year. Every single NFL team is chock full of the best talent in the world at playing football. So the two things that generally make a huge difference in that league are, you know, coaching, the scheme, coaching matters, and quarterbacks, and also injuries. You go to the college football level, and you could have a brilliant defensive scheme, but if you have a bunch of two- or three-star players, it's not really going to matter, because talent matters more than anything. And there are teams with tremendous talent advantages. And Belichick comes to Nebraska. He brings his staff with him, Mike Lombardi, a bunch of NFL guys. And they just kind of go in the portal and grab bodies. They don't really have any intel on why those guys are in the portal or whether or not they're the kind of guys who can truly compete at the level North Carolina needs to compete at. And, well, we are seeing the results. And I just think that, I mean, the truth of the matter is it was maybe it works. But, like, you know, Deion Sanders at Colorado struggled in his first year and took a leap forward in his second year. But Deion brought Shador Sanders and the eventual Heisman Trophy winner and Travis Hunter with him. He brought five-star talent. North Carolina doesn't have any of that. They're not getting it in the recruiting, you know, in the recruiting class right now either. And it's just, it's a situation where Bill Belichick was not the choice of the athletic director at North Carolina. He wanted to go after a guy like Matt Campbell. Last year, North Carolina was the best available job among Power Four programs, which would not be the case this year if they decide to move on from Belichick. But some boosters and big money guys wanted to, you know, flex their muscle and say, look, we can bring Bill Belichick. And Bubba Cunningham's hand was kind of forced. He had to hire Bill Belichick. But I think Bubba Cunningham kind of understood what the likely outcome of that was going to be. And we're seeing it to where this is it's not a good football team. And Bill Belichick might be one of the greatest coaches of all time, but I'm sure you've heard it plenty of times too. What's his record without Tom Brady? Was it Brady? Was it Belichick? I feel like there's a whole lot of evidence based on how things have gone since their split that Brady had a bigger hand in it than Bill Belichick did. So I just don't think this hire ever made sense to begin with. And I am not surprised that it is not working out.
Tom Fornelli hanging out here on the show. Tom, there was a time when the Red River game was definitive in college sports, right? It really mattered, and it said something about maybe the winner being a lead among the elite. When you look at that game, is the takeaway Texas maybe can be as good as we thought? Is it Oklahoma is as bad as they were last year? What's the appropriate evaluation of that game?
They are both extremely flawed teams, and I think Texas is, I mean, they're kind of mirror images of each other in that they have very good defenses. They have quarterbacks who are up and down who can make spectacular plays but can also make tremendous mistakes, and they're both playing behind terrible offensive lines. And I think that is the one kind of Achilles heel, particularly for Texas. That offensive line stinks, just to be blunt, and it's kind of incredible considering how well that Steve Sarkisian and that staff have recruited those positions over the last few years, that you thought when they lost the guys that they lost on that line last year to the NFL that they would be able to replace them and maybe there'd be a slight drop-off. But the drop-off has been just, you know, like off a cliff. It has been very bad, and you're not really seeing any improvement week to week. So I think because of their defense, Texas will be in games for the rest of the year, and they might even be able to work their way into the college football playoff as an at-large. It's just, I think that's the absolute ceiling for this team this year. For Oklahoma, there was a lot of hype around John Mateer as a transfer coming in, into which I saw he was being compared to Baker Mayfield and that kind of stuff at Oklahoma. And the fact of the matter is, if you watch John Mateer at Washington State, he had a whole heck of a lot of highlight reel plays when he was playing against nobody. But when Washington State was playing good teams, he was struggling. He was throwing interceptions. What happened yet last week when Oklahoma ran into a good team in Texas or a good defense? He turned the ball over. That has always been baked in. In fact, you saw, if you go back to the Michigan game a few weeks ago, that Michigan dropped a few should have been interceptions. We have seen it all year. It's just Oklahoma was able to get away with it because defenses were dropping the ball. That didn't happen against Texas. I look at both teams. I think Texas is better than Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma's schedule is much more difficult from here on out, and we're probably going to see them lose three or maybe even four more games. This might be a team that starts off 5-0 and finishes 7-5.
Wow. Man, Oklahoma going the way of Nebraska. Talking to Tom Fornelli here on the show. Tom, let's close here and define elite however you want. I suppose I would define an elite college football team as capable of making maybe the national championship game, right? Being almost championship level. How many elite teams do you think there are in college football right now?
I think there's one truly elite team, and I think that's Ohio State. I look at it right now, and I feel like that's the team that is the most likely to win the national title, but that's not a guarantee because in the 12-team field, they're going to have to win at least three games against other very good teams to do so. It's just, I think once you get past Ohio State, that the two between 2 and 10, it's very tight. The gap is not nearly as wide as it used to be, and I think that's the one thing we've seen with the transfer portal is that all the depth that had been at the top programs where the third stringers were five stars has been kind of sapped from those teams to those teams that were in that 20 to 10 range, and now they're kind of closing that gap because of it. So I think that there are realistically probably six teams I think could win the national title this year. I think Ohio State's by far the favorite, but I would say Ohio State, Miami, Indiana, Alabama, even Oregon still, despite that loss. These are all teams that I think can still win a national title.
Tom, great stuff, buddy. Go Bears. Thanks for making time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, pal. Tom Fornelli on the show, CBS Sports college football reporter, co-host of the Cover 3 podcast. You should follow Tom on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. Matt Rhule, Ryan. Matt Rhule. Pushing that 2-23, Matt Rhule.
You know what they say, right? Anytime you have a chance to fire someone, to hire the same person with the same issues, got to do it.
Hiring Missouri's coach actually is not a terrible idea.
Drink.
Yeah, Eli's good. He can recruit. He competes.
He's got a little fire to him. I like that little personality.
He's cool. He's cool. He's cool. He's charming, too, by the way.
He's
a little more charming with the media. All right. I mean, there is a rock that sits on my desk that my kids gave me. It's just a rock. That rock is more charming than James Franklin, so I'm not sure that's a high bar, but I think Eli's actually charming. 888-710-4ISN if you want to give us a call, or as the show has gone this way, tell us why you think the Bills are frauds or cats are evil. It's been a show. We have a great buy or sell. We have not gotten to Major League Baseball. It's been a remarkable postseason, and there is a question about whether or not a Milwaukee Brewer failed his team, sacrificed an entire season potentially, because he wouldn't sacrifice a little pain in the moment. We will get into that. I think it's very interesting next here on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
Come on, you're New York City. You're the biggest, most vibrant city in America and one of the most incredible cities in the world. You have two football teams. You can't field one football team that's any good.
I don't know how you feel about this. I would argue the Giants have been more of an embarrassment than the Jets even over the last few years.
It's trying to, take two morons and have an idiot contest. And okay. Congratulations.
You both win.
This other guy won, so it doesn't make you smart. You're still a moron. You're in the competition, but way to go.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Welcome back into good-looking moronic cat talking radio. Bill Ryder with you. What's up? Let's go. What's up, America? I bet, Ryan, that I have lived in more states than you have been to.
Oh, just been to? I have to count in the break. I have off the top of my head, I've probably been to 12 or 13 states.
Okay, then you probably got me, because I probably lived in 8 or 9 states. We'll do a little countdown.
Okay.
Don't let me forget.
I'll start calculating right now.
I can't get Titus's information out of my brain that I was aware of but hadn't really thought about. What if Buffalo's just not very good? What if everybody in the AFC is just not very good?
Someone's got to win. Wow, how about that? Just a terrible AFC.
Jim Harbaugh time.
Let's go. Aaron Rodgers time.
Should we? John Harbaugh's not getting fired. I'm not saying John Harbaugh's getting fired. But if it gets, you think he might get fired?
Not, no. I mean, should?
You can't fire him.
Should?
I think he gets one really bad year. He gets one bad year.
But it's one bad year after like years of, I think we could argue fairly, coming up short.
That's true. But I do think that the Chiefs factor is a legitimate impediment. I'm not sure that people should be fired because they couldn't get past Michael Jordan. I'm not sure that people should be, you don't get fired if you're a golfer, but you know, you get take my meaning because you couldn't beat Tiger. I think the Chiefs are that level, at least on the AFC side. John Harbaugh would be hired in 10 seconds.
Right, but also doesn't mean that for this certain situation, right, that like moving on from him if you're the Ravens isn't the right move.
I think it's the wrong move.
We'll see.
I mean, the guy also won a Super Bowl there. He has a Super Bowl with Flacco.
It's been a long time.
It's been a long time. Let's do a little buy or sell.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
And by the way, I love Buy or Sell. This portion of the show is brought to you by Ethos Life, the easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes, up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam, just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com. Not available in all states.
Speaking of firing, Bill, let's start with maybe the coach on the hottest seat in the NFL. That's Mike McDaniel and Ryan the Dolphins. There's more fallout coming from Tua's comments he made on Sunday afternoon after he called out the Dolphins' leadership for players skipping player-only meetings, etc. So his former teammate, Deshaun Hamilton, called out Tua on social media, claiming that he showed up late to a team meeting a few years ago with no repercussions whatsoever. Other former NFL players, including Andrew Whitworth, LeSean McCoy, and Dez Bryant, all criticized Tua's lack of leadership. And yesterday, even Dolphins head coach Mike McDaniel, one day removed, Bill, from praising Tua for his comments about holding people accountable, walked back to his defense of his quarterback. Take a listen.
You guys caught me before I heard them, so it was kind of like, I it doesn't surprise me, whatever reaction. I think, regardless of an intent and, what was on Tua's mind, after a loss as the franchise quarterback, that's not the forum to displace that. I think he knows that now.
So buy or sell, Bill, Tua owes his teammates an apology.
I mean, what a absolute dumpster fire. Buy. I'm sure you saw in the sort of multitude of things that have come out, a former teammate who, by his own admission, was there for 2 seconds, said in his 2 weeks there, I think on the reserve team, Tua was late for a meeting.
It's not good.
Tua Tagovailoa. Buy or sell, Mike McDaniel sounds like he's been broken.
Buy.
Hi, guys. You caught me talking about something I don't even know. And I hate everything.
No, yeah, and we should have gotten to this yesterday, and you pushed, and I just didn't get to it. Because it's hard to really get excited about, what are they, 1-5? A 1-5 football team, but man, Tua. I still can't believe that Tua Tagovailoa successfully replaced Jalen Hurts in a national championship game at Alabama in the second half to win, and you fast forward, and these are their careers now.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah, it is.
Very, very crazy. Speaking of which, this is pretty crazy.
I love crazy stuff.
How about Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin? Very un-Mike Tomlin-like, Bill. Yeah. Had some pointed criticism towards the Browns yesterday after they traded their quarterback last week, Joe Flacco, to the Bengals. Take a listen.
You know, to be honest, it was shocking to me. Andrew Berry must be a lot smarter than me or us because it doesn't make sense to me to trade a quarterback that you think enough of to make your opening day starter to a division opponent that's hurting in that area. But that's just my personal feelings.
Hell of a comment here. Obviously, Tomlin played the Browns last week, playing the Bengals on a short week this week. Buy or sell, you have a problem, Bill, with Mike Tomlin criticizing the decision-making of a division rival.
I mean, buy. In the sense that it's so out of character for him. Any coach doing this, you're criticizing a rival GM for a move that they made? Talk about your own. Can you imagine if somebody, if another head coach criticized Mike, another GM criticized Mike Tomlin's coaching at a press conference? So my first thought was, oh man, Mike's been spending too much time with Aaron. It's starting to rub off. But here's my, I'm going to give you my actual theory. And by the way, you know you're allowed to sell my theories. You don't have to be nice all the time. I know deep down, I know inside, I've been around you now, you're not nice. So you can just let it out.
Wait, what?
You're not. You hold that stuff way too tight. It's bad for you. You hold it. You hold your anger so in, right? You do. Anyway, that's not the question, but that you could buy that phone. All right, I'm going to give you my theory. You can buy or sell.
You know you do.
You're coiled tight, bro. You got to let some of that out. There's got to be a happy medium between you and the other guy, the last guy. All right, here we go. You ready?
Ready.
My theory is that despite the fact that the Steelers are 4-1, and maybe more prestigiously, they were fourth on the Writer of the New Power rankings, I think Mike Tomlin's worried it's a bit of an illusion and or the wheels can come off a little bit, and his comments reflect an hard-to-read insecurity or concern about his team given their record, but a concern that's there nonetheless.
Bye.
Yeah. First thing I thought.
So out of cap. Let me ask you this, too. Is it a little soft that he's saying this after the fact when he could have said it Friday? Like, he said after they played the Browns, after they won the game.
Yeah.
Should he have said
totally
it,
soft.
Know, like, Friday, like, going into the game? Like, what the hell are they doing? Why are we
right, didn't want to give
Dylan
any
Gabriel?
Bold board material?
Right.
It's a weird... It's so out of character. It's hard to... If this were, you know, most other coaches in the National Football League, I would talk about it. I'd be surprised. I would... It wouldn't be great. It'd be the same reaction in turn. But also just, I'm... If you were to make me power rank a list of coaches that I thought would never do this, he'd be number one on that list, I think.
Without Bill Belichick in the NFL, I would agree. He's the last person you'd think would go out of his way
right.
to say something like
right.
that. It's crazy.
And Bill Belichick maybe would do it now because Jordan Hudson would tell him to. So it's different, you know, the... Oh, man.
We'll get to him in a little bit. That's for sure. Oh, boy. Before we get to Bill Belichick, how about the Falcons, Bill, on Monday night? Beat the Bills to go to 3-2 on the season. Bijan Robinson and Drake London combined for 396 yards of total offense and two touchdowns. And Michael Penix Jr., the last two games he's played in, has combined to throw for 563 passing yards and three touchdowns. The Atlanta defense so far through the first 6 weeks of the season, they are first in total defense, seventh in scoring defense. Playing pretty well, both sides of the ball. Buy or sell, the Falcons are a playoff team.
There are very few teams you can rule out right now, by the way, as not being playoff teams.
That is very true. Probably, what,
would
five?
Would you put the Ravens, buy or sell, you put the Ravens on a they're out of the playoffs list?
Sell.
No, they're probably not going to, but.
Probably, can I say definitively?
Right, definitively. The no. Jets are not making the playoffs.
Yes, absolutely. Titans, not making the
Titans
playoffs.
Titans are not. How's their coach doing? Oh, yeah. Bummer.
Bye.
That's so sad.
I will. I mean, Michael Penix Jr. said, you know what? Bye. Sure.
Bye.
I talked to the Kluger yesterday, Adam Klug, former. I've had a lot of executive producers. Former executive producer of this show. And he's a Falcons fan, so maybe I'm just leaning a little bit into his sort of he wants to be so. But yes, they. I think that's a signature win, Monday Night Football against the Bills.
Couple wins in a row. Now, for them, unfortunately, the NFC looks a lot tougher this year than the AFC.
It's weird, isn't it?
Right?
Not what I expected.
It's
yeah.
flipped. Coming. If they're in the AFC, we're talking but, they're probably third in the power rankings.
But how many teams, let me push back gently, how many teams do you fear in the NFC? Do you fear the Niners? No, I respect them. Do you? I'm not even sure. Do you fear the Eagles? I don't think so. Do you fear the Packers? They did tie against Dallas. Who do you? Do you fear Detroit?
I fear Detroit. I fear the Eagles. I fear the Niners. But I guess maybe without saying fear, right? You look okay. Your division as a Bears fan, NFC North, all four teams. Now it's one third of the way through. A long way to go.
Yep.
All over 500. Three of the four
That's
teams
true.
NFC West over 500. Like, maybe there's teams we you're not like, oh, man, this, like, we can't stop them. But also, I mean, the Falcons aren't one of those teams either. You're, like, in the mix, right, for a playoffs. But there's probably, a like, realistic 11 teams fighting for, like, six, five. Like, if we said the Eagles are a lock, if you, like, you know, you feel
that's
like.
That's why the NFL's so good, man.
Yeah.
The margins are so thin.
They are.
It's so thin.
Not for the Titans. Those margins are pretty wide.
It's fair.
A rough year for them gets worse after a 1-5 start to the season. The Titans fired Brian Callahan. He finishes tenure 4-19 as Titans head coach. Of those 19 losses, Bill, 11 were by 10 or more points. Woof. NFL Network's Ian Rappaport yesterday reported that two early names to watch to replace Callahan in Tennessee are Steelers OC Arthur Smith. Remember, Arthur Smith was an offensive coordinator under Mike Vrabel in Tennessee prior. And Chiefs OC Matt Nagy. Ooh. Buy or sell? You'd be excited for the Titans if they hired either Arthur Smith or Matt Nagy.
Sell. Strong sell. All right, let me ask you a question. I'm just going to ask it. Buy or sell, the Titans should hire Bill Belichick.
Sell.
Okay. Really? They're the Titans.
I'll say this, somewhat facetiously, but maybe half serious. If you're telling me the three finalists, I can only choose one, Bill Belichick, Matt Nagy, Arthur Smith, I'll take Bill.
Yeah, me too. I thought Tom Fornelli made a compelling case last segment that Belichick's problem is that he can't coach at the collegiate level. And as Tom dove into that, he explained how the portal works and you have to know why those guys are in there. And Tom didn't say this, but he basically described Belichick has always trusted the people around him, and the people around him have no idea what they're doing in that framework. So Belichick might be just like my Aaron Rodgers-LeBron theory. Maybe he can still be good if you can strip him of his power and force him to just do what he's good at, which is just coach. Maybe not. It's gone real bad at UNC. But the Titans could use a... But the problem is, if you hire Belichick and he's as bad as he's been, you set yourself back even more years. But I don't want either of the two guys you just mentioned.
Yeah, if I was a Titans fan, I wouldn't want any of those guys either. The NFL announced yesterday, Bill, that they have suspended Lions defensive back Brian Branch one game for his post-game altercation with Juju Smith-Schuster. NFL's Vice President of Football Operations, John Runyon, said this in a quote to explain the suspension. Quote, your aggressive non-football act was entirely unwarranted, posed a serious risk of injury, and clearly violated the standards of conduct and sportsmanship expected of NFL players. Buy or sell, you agree with the NFL's one-game suspension of Brian Branch.
I absolutely buy. I think the suspension makes all the sense in the world. It is the right call, and it doesn't matter. And I've seen the videos of the sort of dirty block that Juju maybe did on. What? Between the whistles, man. Between the whistles. Not after the game in the handshake line. It was fun to watch, though. I'm not going to lie. I did sort of...
You know, I don't want to condone it. At least it wasn't one of those fake fights where it's like, hey, I'm going to beat you up, but like I have five teammates holding back, so I know nothing will happen. It's a real fight.
You're right. It wasn't a fake fight.
There was no fake macho tough guys out there, that's for sure.
To quote, as many do on Sports Talk Radio in America, Bridget Jones's Diary, it's a fight. It's a real fight. Great line.
Perfectly said. Speaking of Bill Belichick, he had to answer some questions about his future. And yesterday, Bill refuted reports of him last week negotiating his buyout with UNC. Take a listen.
Some of the reports out last week about my looking for a buyout and trying to leave here and all that, it's categorically false. There's zero truth to any of that. Glad I'm here. We're working towards our goals and the process.
He's glad to be there, working towards the process, of course. Tar Heels sure. This week, back Bulls. In action. They are flying west to Cal on Friday night. And of the seven games left, Bill, six are against teams right now currently at or above 500. Not easy. Buy or sell, Bill Belichick will finish out the regular season as UNC's head coach.
I'll buy.
Buy.
Close call. I think that the starker question is, and I'll ask you, buy or sell, he will coach game one of next year's UNC season.
Sell.
I think that's probably more accurate.
Let's finish here, Bill, with some baseball. While the Dodgers escaped game one of the NLCS with a 2-1 win over the Brewers, boy, the LA bullpen did not make it easy. So up 2-1, let's fast forward here. Bottom of the ninth inning, Brewers are up. It's 2-1, two outs, bases loaded. Dodgers reliever Blake Treinen threw a 1-2 sweeper to Bryce Terang. That would have hit Terang and would have tied the game if Terang didn't successfully get out of the way of the pitch. Milwaukee second baseman, unfortunately for him, the next pitch struck out in a high fastball. Would have been a ball, by the way, to end the game. Buy or sell, Bryce Terang deserves criticism for getting out of the way of a pitch that, if hit him, would have tied the game.
Buy. Criticize.
Buy.
I didn't play Major League Baseball. I didn't play collegiate baseball. I didn't play high school baseball. I started playing tennis in high school. But I played baseball, and I was like, okay, did you play baseball? And I'm a lefty who would crowd the plate. I got hit a lot. And I would Roger Dorn that thing. You ever see Dorn, like, has turns into the ball? You got it. Now, this was at his kneecap. I've watched. But, dude, you got to let it hit you. You have to go up to the plate understanding anything close you lean into. I mean, I'm half tempted if the ball's over the plate to try to get hit by it. I am, like, oh, my shoulder.
Just flail.
Yeah, you should be criticized.
The plate. Oh, I've been hit.
Oh! The Dodgers bullpen's so bad. But it was a fun. I was trying my best to sort of keep an eye on that. It's such a fun game. My son kept, every time I would leave the room, he would turn it back to baseball. He's obsessed with baseball now.
A win for Rob Manfred. Let's go.
He got into the Cubs run. But this is the thing. Like, success matters. And this goes back to my whole baseball thing. My kid's into it because he lives in L.A. and he's a Cubs fan, right? So he gets good baseball. If my son, if we were living in Pittsburgh, he wouldn't. There's zero chance he'd care about baseball. Personal emotional investment is what pulls you into the broader sport. Write that down, Robert Manfred. You can have it for free. We're going to keep the conversation going, and we're going to get a little bit into a theory about why the Titans had to fire their coach. Ryan Hickey came up with it. It's very interesting. We'll get into that after a sports flash from Peter Schwartz.
Infinity Sports Network Sports Flash.
Football is heating up and basketball is back, so download the Prize Picks app and use code PRIMETIME and get $50 bonus credit instantly when you play $5. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com for restrictions and details. After dropping game one last night 2-1, the Brewers hope to even the NLCS at a game apiece when they host the Dodgers tonight in game two. Last night, Blake Snell had one hit and struck out 10 over 8 scoreless innings. But Christian Yelich says the Brewers will be just fine.
We faced one of the best pitchers in the game. He was on. When he's executing like that, it's going to be a tough night. We got a lot of young guys in here, a lot of these guys first time facing him. So it'll be all right. You know, he did a great job tonight. You got to give him credit sometimes, and just proud of the guys for battling until the end right there.
Freddie Freeman homered for the Dodgers last night and said it was nice to get game one.
Getting on the road in an environment and taking the first one, it's huge. You can't understate that at all, just kind of how we did it in Philly. And to get the first one and you turn it over to Yoshi tomorrow, we obviously feeling pretty good. So hopefully we can score some more runs tomorrow.
First pitch tonight, 8:08 Eastern. I'm Peter Schwartz.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you here. Messing with Ryan Hickey. Little inside joke there. Just pretended the whole equipment broke down. But it didn't. He got all defensive. The Defensive Player of the Week, by the way, speaking of which, the Defensive Player of the Week is sponsored by the Navy Federal Credit Union, who proudly serves the Armed Forces, DOD, veterans, and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Dodgers pitcher Blake Snell threw an absolute gem last night. He tossed 8 shutout innings while allowing just one hit and struck out 10 batters. As L.A., despite that bullpen, beat the Brew Crew 2-1 in Game 1 of the NLCS, Snell became the first pitcher to face the minimum amount of hitters through 8 innings in a playoff game since Don Larsen did it all the way back in 1956. It is easy to forget how the Dodgers just collect stars. A lot of the guys on that team were not Dodgers. I mean, I know that baseball doesn't work now in the way where you sort of raise up a team through your farm system. It doesn't work that way. Baltimore's tried it. The Royals did it years ago. But, I mean, it's not as if Blake Snell was drafted by the Dodgers. Anyway, I'm not going to go on that rant. I'm rooting for the Brewers. I want to root for the Brewers. You know what I'm finding? Their fans remind me of Yankees fans. I like the team. I like the city. I like the people. Their fans are so obnoxious sometimes. Not all of them, but some of them. And not obnoxious as people. Like, I'm not saying Bart's obnoxious or whatever. I'm just saying as Brewers fans.
Okay. Is it obnoxious enough to make you root for your, I guess, technically hometown team?
I mean, I kind of like that. I like the Dodgers, but I'm sick of them.
So is it safe to say, no matter who wins the series, you'll be rooting for the AL winner, which up to nothing probably will be the Mariners?
I'm rooting for the Mariners regardless. Yeah.
Okay.
And look, you said it. They're halfway home. They're not home to the World Series. They're halfway to the World Series.
The only MLB franchise to never make the World Series is two games away.
Which means even if they're up 3-0, there's a long ways to go.
I tell you that as a Cubs fan.
You sent me a really interesting thing, and I just want to read this in lieu of Brian Callahan getting fired as the Titans head coach. The last four quarterbacks taken first overall have seen their first head coach fired during their rookie season. That is crazy. Trevor Lawrence, Urban Meyer in dysfunction. Bryce Young got Frank Reich fired. Caleb Williams got Matt Eberflus fired. And Cam Ward obviously just was associated with Brian Callahan being fired. It does underscore the poison chalice that is getting that guy. But I also think that, so you have a coach and you know you're going to have the number one pick in the draft. And the Bears got it in an unusual way with Caleb Williams because they had that trade with Carolina. Okay. I wonder if maybe one of the problems for some of these NFL teams is there, if you, through incompetence or a great trade or whatever it is, if you get the top pick in the draft and you then draft a quarterback, which people tend to do, maybe the most important thing is pairing that guy with the right head coach. And I don't even mean a good head coach, although these guys certainly have not covered themselves in glory in their times with these teams. I just mean, even if you have a head coach that you think is good enough, and they thought Eberflus was good enough. They're like, okay, you know, they've got to be the exact right fit for that talent. Because you only get so many chances with these young guys before you ruin their confidence. Maybe the Bears were able to figure it out because they got Ben Johnson this year for Caleb, but you run the risk of destroying this really valuable asset. I mean, is anyone going to tell me that even before they started whatever they are, 1-5? 1-5? Titans 1-5? Callahan was like the guy that was going to make sure Cam Ward was successful? Of course not. Of course not. Urban Meyer was the guy that was going to make Trevor Lawrence successful? The guy hadn't been an NFL coach. I think in a lot of ways, if you go back to that example in Jacksonville, they thought, okay, Trevor's so talented, it won't matter, and we can just take advantage of Urban being available. We don't have to worry about his development. It's just you're thinking backwards. So, yeah, the takeaway here for me, Ryan, it's not easy to succeed in the NFL at the quarterback position, even despite, maybe because of the massive expectations that come with being the or one of the heralded quarterbacks in a draft. You've got to surround them with the right person. I'm sure it's equally difficult to evaluate what coach is going to be capable of helping a quarterback transition to the National Football League, but that needs to be the priority if you have the benefit of drafting the next franchise quarterback.
And also highlights the thinking of you can't draft a quarterback expecting them to be your savior because, like you just said, I'm sure they thought, okay,
yes,
Cam Moore's going to make Brian Callahan look good. You know, Caleb Williams is going to make Matt Eberflus. If you're drafting a quarterback to make your head coach better than he has been already, you're going to end up like all those coaches, fired immediately, and you're going to put your rookie quarterback behind the eight ball. He's going to already have now two new systems in the span of a few months. He has to learn.
You know, one of the things I think Sean McDermott doesn't get enough credit for? Remember how well the Buffalo Bills managed Josh Allen's sort of entry into the NFL? They took pressure off him because he obviously the guy's got a live arm. But if it's easy to forget, especially before what Stephon Diggs came into the picture when he came over from Minnesota, that Allen looked lost. He looked like a talented guy that maybe wasn't going to make it. And they said all of the right things. And I'm trying to remember this. I'm trying to Google it. It's not coming up. I think that McDermott was in his second year as a head coach when Josh Allen came in, when they drafted Josh Allen. Remember, Josh Allen came from a small school in college. He wasn't didn't have the same level of competition. The talent was obvious. We don't give, I don't give, I'm giving him now. Sean McDermott should get so much credit for just helping Josh Allen to grow as a quarterback the right way. It's so critical. Fun show today, great show. Weird turn on Pete Hayton Cats, but it happens. Thank you to Tom Fornelli. Thank you to Ryan Hickey. Thank you, Peter Schwartz. Thank you for listening wherever you are. I'm Bill Ryder. We appreciate you. We'll see you back here tomorrow on Ryder Than You.